Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome into Soccer Morning, live and on the air, ready to go. What are we going to talk about today? Well, whatever could we find to wax poetic about in the world of soccer on a Wednesday? I don't know. Yes, of course we know. There's only really one thing. I mean, I got news. I got a rundown. We're going to talk about some other stuff. There may even be MLS news in the world. There's some, hey, well, an American international made his debut on loan for Sunderland yesterday. That's in the news. That's a thing we could talk. And yet, no. No, there is only one event that is worth spending any real time on today. And that's actually going to spin us into our guests, a guest on Wednesday, Ross Dunbar, who writes about the Bundesliga and covers the Bundesliga for Fox Sports and DW Sports, will join us in a little while to discuss. Yep, there it is, leading the news, Robert Lewandowski scoring 5 goals in 10 minutes after coming on as a substitute in Bayern's 5-1 win over Wolfsburg. He scored all 5 of those goals. He did it in a lightning fashion. They were all excellently taking goals, all of them. The last one was probably the best, but there were some real peaches in that bunch from Robert Lewandowski. Here are some stats from Robert Lewandowski as I dive into the news and his five goal performance for Bayern Munich yesterday. His first 3 goals were scored within 3 minutes and 22 seconds, the fastest hat trick in Bundesliga history. 4 goals in 5 minutes and 42 seconds, also the fastest in Bundesliga history. And 5 goals in 8 minutes and 59 seconds. So he didn't even get to 9 minutes. That's a Bundesliga record. Lewandowski is the first substitute in Bundesliga history to score 5 goals. It was the first time in 24 years that someone has scored 5 goals in a Bundesliga match. Lewandowski's first hat trick for Bayern. Okay, so hat trick plus 2. 2013, this is just reminding everyone of what Lewandowski can do. He scored 4 for Dortmund in a 4-1 win over Real Madrid in the first leg of the UEFA Champions League semifinal. He's the first sub to score 5 goals in the history of the 4 top European leagues, the Premier League, La Liga, the Bundesliga, or in Serie A. Quickest to 5 goals ever in the 4 big European leagues. 8 minutes 57 seconds, or 8 minutes 59 seconds. A couple seconds here or there. Who needs that? The last time, we have a record of, I don't know. There's just so many stats and so many records here coming from Lewandowski's performance. If you missed it, of course, a lot of you guys work. You're sitting in cubicles. You can't watch Bundesliga in the middle of the day. I'll admit that I was watching something else. Maybe I was watching the aforementioned U.S. international make his debut in the Capital One Cup, which I'll get to in a second. And then I saw Twitter on fire, and I felt like I needed to switch over. And you get this. This is how amazing it was. He scored 3 in the aforementioned 3 minutes and 22 seconds, and I thought, oh, well, I missed him. Maybe I'll see a replay. Maybe I'll see a couple replays, and I'll be able to see what Lewandowski did. A hat trick in 3 minutes? This is insane. No one does this. And then I got to see 2 more goals because that's how amazing his performance was. Again, we could spend a whole hour on Lewandowski today. We'll certainly spend some time with Ross Dunbar on Lewandowski, and we'll take a look at the wider Bundesliga picture. Last night in the CONCACAF Champions League, DC United came back from a 3-0 deficit in Jamaica to draw with Montego Bay United. They did not look into that game for a long time, and it actually took an added time goal to get level. W Connection loses 1-0 at home to Santos. No surprise there. Hankook Verdes, which is a thing, beat San Francisco of Panama 2-1 in the Champions League as well. There are games tonight in the CONCACAF Champions League. You've got Seattle and Vancouver. I remember Seattle took down Vancouver in league play this weekend. You've got the LA Galaxy in a CONCACAF Champions League match against Central. They'll be down in they'll be at Central for that match. One win will give LA the group win with a game to spare. You also have RSL taking on Santa Tecla That game is in Utah. All right. The MLS Players Union has released their latest round of salary information. 23 players are making more than $1 million. Didier Drogba is making $2.1 million. That's actually a pay cut to come join the Montreal Impact. Giovanni Dos Santos is making $5.7 million, sixth highest in the league. Kaká, top of the list with $6.6 million salary. Steven Gerrard, $6.2 million. And Frank Lampard, $6 million. There's where all your money's going in MLS. CFA has revoked Gabriel's red card and suspended Diego Costa 3 games for his actions in Saturday's Chelsea-Arsenal match. Chelsea is very disappointed. Of course they are. U.S. international DeAndre Yedlin making his Sunderland debut, as I mentioned, in a 4-1 loss to Manchester City in the League Cup. He had a couple of nice moments. He provided an assist on the Black Cats' lone goal, which came late, did not change anything about that game. But he, again, he had a couple of moments, hit a couple of nice crosses. Perhaps he can get some more time under Dick Advocaat. Other results from yesterday, just running down a bunch of scores in the Capital One Cup. Aston Villa beating Birmingham City 1-0. Fulham losing to Stoke at home 1-0. Leicester City 2-1 over West Ham. Hull 1-0 over Swansea. There are some other games there. Those are the highlights. In the Bundesliga, Ingolstadt falling to Hamburg 1-0 at home. Hertha Berlin 2-0 over Cologne. And Darmstadt with a win 2-1 over Werder Bremen. That game also included Aaron Johansson, who played for Werder Bremen. Did he score in that game? I didn't write that down, Trevor. He may have scored in that game. La Liga, Atletico Madrid 2-0 over Getafe. He did score that game. Thank you, Trevor. Espanyol 1-0 over Valencia. Granada falling 0-3 to Real Sociedad. And then Serie A, Udinese 2-3 against AC Milan, so a road win for AC Milan. Mario Balotelli scoring the opener for the Rossoneri in that game. Ligue 1, PSG 3-0 over Guingamp, and Angers 0-0 with Rennes. My French is terrible, but there you go. All right, let's step aside. We will prepare ourselves to spend some time talking about Robert Lewandowski and the historical achievement he put in yesterday for Bayern Munich. Ross Dunbar will join us from Fox Sports and DW Sports. Don't go anywhere. Soccer Morning on a Wednesday, worldsoccertalk.com. Facing the crowd, you're talking too loud, but I can't hear you calling. During the past few months, we've created a new weekend tradition, which includes watching your favorite MLS team play on TV, muting the broadcast, heading to Rabble.tv to hear my audio during the game, and then drinking a cold beverage as we spend 90 minutes together discussing our favorite league. And now we're taking it to the next level by bringing back Jared Dubois to join me this Sunday for LA Galaxy FC Dallas at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the Galaxy versus Dallas game on TV, press the mute button, and then head over to Rabble.tv to listen to me and Jared through your desktop, through your iOS Android app, or through your mobile browser. Plus, before or during the game, you can join in by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. Or why don't you create your own broadcast and call one of your team's games? It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me and Jared this Sunday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern for LA Galaxy against FC Dallas on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
We are back on Soccer Morning. We are joined now via Skype by our friend Ross Dunbar. He works for Fox Sports and DW Sports, and he covers the Bundesliga. Ross, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm well. We will spend, 25 minutes, 30 minutes or so having a chat this morning, this afternoon in your case. And I wonder where we should start, Ross. What should we talk about? I don't know how to properly frame this. Both of us write for part of our livings, and what Robert Lewandowski did yesterday is not something that any football fan ever imagines will actually happen.
Yeah, I must admit, I was kind of hyperventilating after the fifth goal. I kind of had to calm down a bit after it. So Yeah, it was just incredible.
And again, he comes on as a substitute. He scores 5 in 9 minutes, and depending on who's counting, or sorry, yeah, it's about 9 minutes, and it creates this sort of hysterical giggling. After you were hyperventilating, I'm just giggling because you can't possibly understand how this is happening, and it's not as though this was a minnow. This isn't one of Germany's weak sisters that he did this against. This is against Wolfsburg. Is there any... Sorry, do I still have... Oh, I've lost Ross. Skype does not want to work nearly as well as Robert Lewandowski today. So, I apologize. Let me see if I can get him back. I'm going to do that right this second without even taking a step aside. We'll pull up this call and get Ross back on the air. But again, trying to put this into perspective. You know, 3 goals in a game, 4 goals. Ross, I apologize. The Skype doesn't want to work today. We should probably.
I think it's in the same frame of mind as both of us after watching Lewandowski last night.
Yeah, just again, sort of give me. I mean, I ran down some records that this set. I mean, it obviously set a ton of records. But is there any way to contextualize what Lewandowski did again against a good side, not one of Germany's poorer teams?
I think you only have to look at Pep Guardiola's reaction after the fifth goal. To see what probably the best coach in world football thought of it. It was the downright ridiculous at times. But like you said, broke all kinds of records. I mean, you know, he is the first player to come off the bench and score 5 goals in the Bundesliga, which is quite remarkable in that space of time. And yeah, I'm a bit like you. I'm not really sure how to contextualise it, but it kind of came after a poor first half from Bayern. I think Guardiola admitted that himself. But it was just a remarkable performance.
And how unfair is it? I mean, I don't want to go to the negative side of this because it is such an amazing achievement. And there is really nothing negative to say about Lewandowski or the way that Bayern Munich performed in that second half. But the fact that Bayern Munich has a player like Robert Lewandowski sitting on the bench to come into a game, they're losing 1-0 at halftime to Wolfsburg, one of the top teams in Germany not named Bayern Munich, is kind of unfair, Ross.
Yeah, I suppose it is. But really, I think what Guardiola is trying to do at the moment is, avoid a situation where he has injuries going into a very congested period. I mean, they've got 6 games in 18 days. Obviously, Borussia Dortmund coming up next Saturday. Given the form that they're in at the moment, I don't think he would want to take any risks at this point in the season. And obviously, with the doubleheader against Arsenal, I mean, I think he's right to try and leave Lewandowski out as much as he can, almost, because without doubt, for me anyway, I think he's by far Bayern's best player. And he is the real match winner at times. You know, he's just a complete forward, scores goals, creates goals. Mm-hmm. He defends properly. I mean, I don't think there's anyone in that Bayern team playing as well as he is right now.
And it's obviously, well, I say it's slightly unfair. At the same time, it's not as though Dortmund is suffering without him in their start to this season. They're perfect. They've scored 18 goals.
Yeah.
They've only given up 3. They're right there with Bayern Munich at the moment. But I guess we can flip over to Dortmund and their start to this season, Ross. Did we see this one coming?
We expect that Dortmund improvement from last season, but certainly not as quickly as it's happened in the first few months of the season. I was at Dortmund on Sunday for the game against Leverkusen, and I mean, some of the football was just unbelievable. It was so quick, it was so incisive. I think what Tuchel has done is kind of maintained the kind of urgency and tempo that Klopp had, but you can see a lot more tactical now, so you can see a little bit more method in what they're doing. They obviously work on these passages of play and training all the time because the same moves they try. You know, they try and get the fullbacks involved. You look at guys like Kagawa and Mkhitaryan; they just look completely different from last season when Dortmund were extremely poor under Klopp. So I don't think we expect them to do as well as they did, but now it kind of gives us the impression that you would expect them to put in a title challenge. I'm still not sure whether that's going to be possible. I think the game at the Allianz Arena next week will really kind of give us the impression as to whether when they're there for the long haul or it's just for, you know, a few months at the start of the season.
I'm going back to Lewandowski, and we're going to do that. Things are going to come into my head, and we're going to have to talk about Lewandowski and Bayern Munich again. Wolfsburg had four clean sheets before that match. They had given up two goals in five matches. Now they've given up seven, and five of them have been scored by the same man. I'm sorry. It's here. I'm giggling again, Ross. It's stunning. Okay, so, you know, as we said, Borussia Dortmund with a fine start to the season. Whether or not they can keep pace with Bayern Munich remains to be seen, but I do think it's good that we have seen them come out of the gates this strong and kept it interesting at least to this point. I mean, you're not going to say that the title race is over in September, but the way that Bayern Munich sucks up talent and certainly having Pep Guardiola, despite his odd relationship with everything around the club, there was every sense in the world that they were just going to walk this again.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but I think what interests me about Guardiola this season is that in the first two seasons, I thought he was doing a very, very good job. And I thought, okay, you know, I can see a real strategy behind what he's trying to do. This season, to me, I'm still not sure exactly what he's trying to develop at Bayern Munich, because he's chopping and changing the team every week.
Seem to have lost Ross again. The connection has gone bad. No, the call is still there. Ross, are you with me? All right, now I got an internet connection problem with Ross. Okay, so I suppose the soccer gods just don't want us to have a good discussion with Ross Dunbar about Lewandowski and Bundesliga. Let me see one more time if I can grab him back. I apologize for the technical difficulties. This has been a bad week for Skype. It just has been. So we're talking about Pep Guardiola and his stewardship of Bayern Munich. And I think what's interesting about Pep at Bayern for me is that while his stint at Barcelona was clearly about him, that being his club, he played there, he grew up there, he was solidly connected, his roots were strong. Ross, I apologize again. You were talking about Pep at Bayern Munich. Yeah. Sort of like, I was just giving my sense that while Pep at Barcelona was about roots, about mm-hmm. Where he was from and who he played for and where he grew up. We know that this is a mercenary job for him at Bayern Munich, and that kind of colors everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was saying that, you know, in this season, his third season at Bayern Munich, I mean, as far as I remember, his third season at Barcelona's best season at the club. Or sort of second season, but then I think this season the players that they've brought in doesn't really fit the kind of cohesive strategy that Guardiola has tried to implement at Bayern Munich. You look at someone like Arturo Vidal, for example, or Douglas Costa. They're both very different players, and he's chopped and changed a lot of the starting 11s. We've seen Alaba playing centre half. We've seen Rafinha playing centre half. To me, it looks a little bit kind of scattergun at the moment, and I think we're almost kind of waiting for Champions League matches for Guardiola and Bayern to be tested, because mm-hmm. right now in the Bundesliga, they have the kind of quality that wipes the floor with everyone. Yeah. You know, I thought in Darmstadt on Saturday last week, I thought they were not so great either. So I'm really interested to see, you know, whether they get tested against Dortmund on October the 4th or whether it will be against Arsenal that they'll get tested. But I think it will give us a good impression as to whether this Bayern team can actually go all the way, perhaps in the Champions League.
Well, that's interesting. So what you're implying there is that because of the overwhelming amount of talent that he has, he can, you know, he's not going to throw out any 11, any random 11, but he can throw out a team with some players shifted around and obviously mm-hmm. rest some players. And generally speaking, against every, and we'll again find out against Dortmund, or maybe Arsenal, he can get away with that because there's not a lot of pressure on him from those other Bundesliga teams. Whereas if he goes up against a top class side, now he's got to be Pep Guardiola the tactician again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think when you look at Bayern Munich over the last 3 years, I think, you know, their success has been characterized by, you know, having great combinations in a lot of areas of the pitches. You know, you've seen players like Philipp Lahm and Thomas Müller combining to great effect. You've seen players like David Alaba and Franck Ribéry combining on the left. You've seen last season Juan Bernat, who was the first choice left back at the time, playing really well on there. But I think when you chop and change so much, it must be difficult for the players to understand what kind of roles they're trying to play within that system. I mean, we've seen in the last few weeks, like I said, Alaba at centre-half, Rafinha centre-half, Xabi Alonso has played centre-half. I mean, that just shows you that they have an amazing amount of talent that really they're not being tested at a great level in the Bundesliga. Okay, while last night was just unbelievably good, I think maybe there was an element of the freakishness about it. Mm-hmm. I think if Wolfsburg maybe had kept focus after the first goal, maybe that wouldn't have happened. Because, you know, the first half that they played yesterday was outstanding. I mean, that's the crazy thing about it. You know, the first half, it was an almost flawless performance from Wolfsburg. Defensively, they were great and they looked brilliant going forward. And also, if Gyavogi had scored that goal from the halfway line, yeah, then we might be talking about something completely different right now. So it's those kind of margins that I think would make Bayern quite uncomfortable going into the Champions League.
You bring me to something there. It's interesting how much people love when Manuel Neuer comes off his line and plays sweeper keeper, but he nearly got himself in. Maybe that game changes if that ball goes in the back and it hit off the post. I mean, it was so close. Is he getting bored? I mean, is that possible for him to get bored and to be making? I mean, you know, again, this is something he does, but that was so dangerous what he did yesterday.
Yeah, it's not been a great week for goalkeepers coming off the lines with Florenzi scoring against Barcelona.
Amazing goal!
Amazing goal! Yeah, I mean, but it shows you how risky that style is. Having
Live radio, there we go. Let's see. Ross's connection has gone bad again. I'm sure this call will drop in mere moments, and we may have to decide whether or not... Ross, are you there? Oh, and there it goes. So something about the connection between us and Ross is not working out very well. At this point, I can continue to... Well, you know what? Whatever. We'll keep going. We're gonna do our Robert Lewandowski impression and just try to make the connection as many times as possible. One more go at this, Ross.
Sorry about this. This Wi-Fi is just horrendous.
Maybe that's what it is. All right. So this should hold out for a couple more minutes. Okay. So we're just talking. We were just talking about Manuel Neuer coming off his line. I mean, that didn't have anything to do with the game. And again, In terms of the result, and he got lucky a little bit. But at the same time, you do wonder if one day this is going to cost Bayern Munich. He's the best goalkeeper in the world for most people. And yet that sort of behavior is maybe an Achilles heel for Bayern against a good side who can take advantage. That's all I'll say. And he nearly committed a red card challenge at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, I would imagine that, you know, having nothing to do for 90 minutes would be an element of complacency. But I wonder, you know, just how much not having a lot to do over two or three seasons, I wonder how much that actually breeds some complacency. Because if you know that 9 times out of 10 or 9.9 times out of 10 that you get away with it, then you're going to probably keep doing it. But, I would assume that that's something that Guardiola insists on. You know, he probably wants 11 men on the pitch to be used at full, at one time.
Yep. Something that maybe gets lost a little bit with Lewandowski's performance yesterday is Douglas. You mentioned Douglas Costa, and he's. I mean, I don't know how you even. You can't, it's hard to contextualize and give proper framing to Lewandowski's achievement. I think it's very difficult to give proper framing to just how quick Douglas Costa is.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I posted a tweet during the Wolfsburg game in the Super Cup, and I just wrote on my notes, this guy is very, very quick. That was really my kind of analysis on him. He's just rapid when he has the ball at his feet. My concern would be sometimes his final ball isn't great, mm-hmm. but I would suspect that's almost the reason why Guardiola has signed him, because, you know, a lot of the time last season, Bayern played a lot of sideway passes. They didn't have players who could cause a little bit of chaos in the last third. And I think players like Costa and Vidal, although they're not technically on the same level as someone like Lewandowski, for example, but they give you something a little bit unpredictable. And maybe that's the reasoning behind having a player like Douglas Costa and Arturo Vidal.
Yeah, I think that when you're as fast as Douglas Costa is, and it appeared this way against Wolfsburg yesterday, you can... you can get away with a not a top class final ball because Yeah, there's chaos. I mean, you've got defenders scrambling to try to figure out how to defend that. And he certainly set up Lewandowski with that sort of play.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think in the last few years when everyone has been trying to copy this Barcelona way of playing, of keeping possession, defending by keeping possession, you almost have lost that kind of winger who would go to the byline, put in a cross and cause a little bit of chaos in the penalty box. But with Douglas Costa coming in, I think it's good to see. And I think you're almost seeing that a big flaw in a lot of fullbacks defending is now being... it's been penalised because nowadays fullbacks are sometimes very poor defenders, and you get a player like Douglas Costa who runs at exceptional pace. You know, it's certainly, it's going to cause a little bit of unpredictability in this Bayern team, I think, going forward.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of what Douglas Costa did yesterday for Bayern Munich, what he does. You're getting teams shifting that responsibility to fullbacks, and wingers are becoming, obviously, playing outside in and lots of things. Obviously, you know, when you have a player like an Arjen Robben, for example, you can get away with that and having a fullback who overlaps. Anyway, since you're bringing that up, and again, we've talked about Pep Guardiola having to be a tactician against top sides, but not necessarily in the Bundesliga. Do you think that dulls? I mean, that was true in some regards during his stint with Barcelona, but he was also honing that style that they became known for with the tiki-taka. You think that's dulled him a little bit being in Germany and having a Bayern Munich team that is so dominant in terms of talent? And I think I've lost Ross again. All right. I think that's time to call that one. We've tried many times. It's not Ross's fault. I apologize for that. But that was a good discussion with Ross Dunbar, trying to put some framework around Robert Lewandowski's achievement yesterday. Certainly Bayern Munich in the Bundesliga. Borussia Dortmund starting very well. What we did not get to, and what I wanted to get to, was obviously that Darmstadt result as they beat Werder Bremen. Probably not what Werder Bremen needs at this point, as they try to reestablish themselves as one of the better teams in the Bundesliga. Right now in 12th place on 7 points, 2 wins, 1 draw, 3 losses for Werder Bremen. So that's not exactly the best start. Obviously, one of the other storylines in Germany is the disaster that is Mönchengladbach. Lucien Favre resigning as the manager of Mönchengladbach after having helped them get back into the Bundesliga a couple of years ago, taking them into a Champions League position last season. And now they're dealing with Champions League football while at the same time having to stare down a really poor start. 0 points from 5 matches. They've given up 12 goals. They've only scored twice. It actually has shades in a different way. Dortmund had established themselves as a power, clearly, and was a power, but it has shades of Dortmund last year when Dortmund was down in the relegation zone while also playing Champions League football and doing well in the Champions League. I'm not, Mönchengladbach, probably not in the same sort of position to be able to handle both of those fronts and be successful at both of them. All right, I think this is an opportunity to take a break, maybe come back and start up the phone lines, get talking to you. If you want to wax poetic about Robert Lewandowski's achievement yesterday, now is the time. Let's go ahead and step aside. Let me just get my old music lined up here. Thank you very much to Ross Dunbar. Go follow him at Ross Dunbar 93. If you have questions we didn't get to, Darmstadt, Gladbach, Werder Bremen, go ask him on Twitter. He'll answer. Talk to you guys in a second. Soccer Morning, WorldSoccerTalk.com. During the past few months, we've created a new weekend tradition, which includes watching your favorite MLS team play on TV, muting the broadcast, heading to Rabble.tv to hear my audio during the game, and then drinking a cold beverage as we spend 90 minutes together discussing our favorite league. And now we're taking it to the next level by bringing back Jared Dubois to join me this Sunday for LA Galaxy FC Dallas at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. With Rabble, the concept is simple. All you have to do is tune into the Galaxy versus Dallas game on TV, press the mute button, and then head over to Rabble.tv to listen to me and Jared through your desktop, through your iOS Android app, or through your mobile browser. Plus, before or during the game, you can join in by posting your questions or observations in the comments section. Or why don't you create your own broadcast and call one of your team's games? It's easy. Sign up for free today and try it out. Join me and Jared this Sunday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern for LA Galaxy against FC Dallas on Rabble.tv, where it's your team and your call.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
All right, we are back. It is Soccer Morning. It is on the air. Again, thanks to Ross Dunbar for showing up. Not his fault that the connection wasn't the best. We got in getting some good chat about the Bundesliga. We can talk about Robert Lewandowski at 646-832-3909. Put this in the pantheon for me, whether it's within a soccer context, the best performances you've ever seen. I mean, you know, this wasn't a Champions League final. This wasn't a World Cup match. This wasn't, the stage was the stage. It was a Bundesliga match early in the year. But again, it was meaningful. The game meant something to their league standings. It was against Wolfsburg. It wasn't against Darmstadt. It wasn't against somebody who you might expect to give up five goals to Bayern Munich. They were already down 1-0 and had been outplayed in the first half. And he came off the bench. I mean, I think that's it's important to remember. Robert Lewandowski was cold when he entered that game. I mean, okay, cold, relatively speaking. And he scored five goals in 9 minutes. I don't even, you know, I'm racking my brain for other sports. You know, what we're talking about, you know, Wilt Chamberlain scoring 100. You know, but that was back in the ancient days of basketball when Wilt was six feet taller than everybody else and just grabbing rebounds. I don't even know where to put this. I don't know. I mean, it is so beyond, again, what your imagination even allows. To have Robert Lewandowski scoring five goals that fast. Okay, maybe he scores a hat trick. I mean, we've seen Messi do amazing things. Take over games by himself and drive Barcelona to wins with three, four goals in a game. We've seen Ronaldo do things like this. Cristiano Ronaldo has had games where he has been so dominant that your jaw drops. But nobody that I'm aware of has ever scored. I mean, look at those records. Has scored five in 9 minutes, like it was nothing. I mean, and they were all well taken, clinical finishes. Amazing. 646-832-3909. I'm just going to review this stuff because I think it's important. Not important. It's fun. His first three goals were scored in 3 minutes and 22 seconds, the fastest hat trick in Bundesliga history. 4 goals in 5 minutes and 42 seconds, also the fastest in Bundesliga history. And of course, 5 goals in little less than 9 minutes, fastest in Bundesliga history. First substitute in the league's history to score 5. First time in 24 years that someone has scored 5 in the top level of Germany. First sub to score 5 goals in the history of the top 4 European leagues, the Premier League, La Liga, Germany, and Italy. I mean, it mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. All right. So we've got Lewandowski. You can talk about that. You can talk about Bayern Munich. Obviously, Champions League, Borussia Dortmund and their start, Mönchengladbach and their struggles, Aaron Johansson at Werder Bremen breaking his duck, but in a loss to Darmstadt on the road. All of that is out there. I want to take this opportunity. I know this isn't directly related to soccer, but Yogi Berra passed away at the age of 90 today. One of the guys I admired a lot as a kid growing up, learning about baseball history. One of the greats of the game. And actually, a guy who did play some soccer as a kid in St. Louis with a bunch of guys who ended up being part of a fantastic St. Louis University soccer program in the 60s and 70s. I mean, that was obviously the dark ages for soccer in the United States. The NASL started in 68 or so. Even then, into the 70s, you know, soccer's place in this country was not, it wasn't a great fit. There were some good moments with the Cosmos and the Rowdies and the Earthquakes and some of these teams. But Yogi Berra did actually have connection, knew a bunch of guys growing up as the son of Italian immigrants in St. Louis playing soccer with people. I thought that was something I wanted to mention this morning. Again, because, you know, Yogi Berra, one of my favorite old baseball players, because that's I think baseball and soccer have a lot in common when it comes to the origins of the games, where the games come from, who plays them, the immigrant nature of those games. I think that's something. And the history, the romanticized history of these sports. And now we have another legend that will go down forever, Robert Lewandowski. Richard in Philly, you're on the air.
Hey, Jason, how you doing?
Doing well, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, I think I will. Let's go back to what you said about Barrow. I think you probably said, but I know he was a very big proponent of the original Cosmos going to their games when they played at Yankee Stadium and Giant Stadium. So I think he's like a very big fan trying to champion the soccer crossover in America.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that at the time that Yogi Berra was most famous and in the game, and of course he coached well into his later years, soccer just didn't have a profile, so he didn't talk a lot about it, but it was always there. In fact, just looking up looking him up this morning after he passed away, he actually did appear in a documentary about those St. Louis University soccer teams, because he was part of that community and knew those guys and grew up playing soccer in addition to playing baseball. So go ahead, Richard.
And I think he was in Once in a Lifetime too, I think. I'm not sure. I got to rewatch it.
Okay.
I want to talk about Lewandowski. I tweeted at you to ask about Dumball, but I don't know if you did not, because the feed kept going in and out. But he did what he did last night was fantastic. But he's a constant goal scorer consistently. So I was wondering, is it time to put him on that top three, top five?
What's that list right now for you? I mean, I think when we talk about would you separate goal scorers from best players? Or are we talking about the same list? I mean, Messi, Ronaldo, Ibrahimovic. Who are you going to put on that list?
I think it's Messi, Ronaldo, Suarez, Neymar.
Okay. Maybe Lewandowski.
Kind of gets jumbled, and maybe put Lewandowski four or five.
Okay. I don't think that because he's
a consistent goal scorer.
Yes.
This just grows on to the legend of the goals he normally scores.
Yeah. I don't want to elevate him just because he scored five in a game. But as you said, it's not necessarily about that. It's about how he is consistently good and consistently clinical. And, you know, Ross sort of said right now, Lewandowski is Bayern Munich's best player. Now, it is sort of an aberration that he came off the bench. I mean, that's about a lot of other things besides. It's not necessarily Robert Lewandowski's second choice. You know what I'm saying? And it was funny because I'm watching that match on Fox Sports 1. And it ends, and they do a little analysis with Ian Joy, who's very, very good, by the way. Need to get him on this show. And Eric Winalda's talking a little bit. And then they go to America's Pregame, which I think is their afternoon, just general sports show. And they have a panel there, and I don't remember who else was on it, but Shannon Sharpe was on this panel. They were going to talk football, clearly. And Shannon Sharpe's a guy who I like because I'm a Broncos fan, but you know, I don't know how tied in he is to soccer, but they sort of talked about it, right? It wasn't just going to be about football. They were going to talk about what just happened because it was so amazing. And Shannon Sharpe goes, that guy came off the bench. I don't think he's been coming off the bench anymore. And I'm thinking, well, that's not really the thing, Shannon.
Well, I think he was. I think he had some nagging injuries. One does, I think, but I'm not exactly sure.
Well, again, I mean, there's so much.
That's what I was saying. Like,
okay,
Ronaldo is a consistently, as we all know, he's my favorite guy, the greatest. And then he has, you already know he's great. And then what he does, on Sunday, the four goals he scores on Sunday. This is the same thing with Lewandowski. You know he's a consistent goal scorer. You know he's a consistent goal scorer. And here we go, just to prove my point, and he goes, let me just show you how good I am. He's five off the bench.
Yeah.
And if you wonder, like, should we start putting him on that list? Because he's, granted, we know that he's great, but we never really discuss when you say who's the best player in the game. We never put, not a lot of people put Lewandowski on that list.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, he's not one of those guys that jumps out at you because he's not a big personality. His talent isn't like, you know, obviously what Messi does that enchants us isn't just about how many goals he scores or how he scores them. It's that he can dribble around anybody, that his control is his first touch and his vision is outstanding. And Messi is maybe more of a complete attacking player than Lewandowski, but Lewandowski in front of goal is in that upper echelon. And again, because he's not Zlatan, and he's not that kind of forceful guy, because he's not Ronaldo, he's not projecting this incredible athletic image and also being incredibly cocky, maybe he gets left aside. Maybe we gloss over him a little bit. And he plays for Poland, who hasn't done a lot on the international stage in a while.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I admit I didn't know who he was until Euro 2012, the last one. Mm-hmm. And then I found out, well, then I learned, oh, he does this every day in Dortmund, apparently. Then now he has the big move to Bayern. But you still see him consistently good at times, scoring the goals, making the big plays. Yeah. And it's now, yeah, and I forgot to put Zlatan on that list, too.
I think that Zlatan is actually aging out of that group a little bit. Zlatan is 30, he'll be 35 in like a week and a half. So I think, okay, Zlatan is getting, or 34, maybe he'll be 34. But it's still, regardless, Zlatan is a great player, but I don't know that he is as dominant as he used to be. He's been dealing with injuries for PSG. But he did score yesterday in that win that PSG had in the league. So I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe Zlatan is the guy we take off the list as we put Lewandowski at 27 in his prime on the list.
That makes sense.
All right. Appreciate the call. Did you got anything else?
That was it.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Good stuff. Richard in Philadelphia. 646-832-3909. Another thing we can obviously talk about here in an American context, the appearance of DeAndre Yedlin at fullback for Sunderland yesterday in their Capital One Cup match against Manchester City. They ultimately lost 4-1. They were done in by a much better team. Kevin De Bruyne, fantastic. I mean, he's a fantastic player. Just unbelievable. But Yedlin had some nice moments. You can go find some of that over at like Stars and Stripes FC, which is obviously the big booster site for the national team, has some of it. And what, it's one performance, but you hope that it buys Yedlin some extra playing time. Whether or not Dick Advocaat sticks it out at Sunderland may have something to say about that. But you hope he gets him some extra playing time, both in the league, maybe in the FA Cup, which they'll have as well. They're still in the FA Cup, right? They haven't crashed out of that tournament. I don't know where they are in the FA Cup. But, you know, it's interesting to see him play fullback and to be, we just got done talking to Ross about what Douglas Costa brings from the wing for Bayern Munich, and a lot of teams don't play with classic wingers anymore, so you're getting your width and those crosses whipped in from your fullbacks. I still feel as though DeAndre Yedlin's best position is fullback. I know that he's had some success on the wing. I just think the two-way responsibilities that become with a midfield role, and look, of course he's got to defend as a fullback, and he's got to get back. But I like him coming from deeper. I like him on the overlap. I think he can find space a little easier than when he's playing as a midfield player. And again, maybe his winger instincts aren't quite there yet. I mean, that sounds odd considering what he does when he does play fullback, which is stay wide and get in those crosses. I don't know. Maybe we should have a discussion about where DeAndre Yedlin should be playing, but I don't know that it matters in terms of the national team, because it seems pretty clear that Jurgen Klinsmann has decided that he's a wing player and not a fullback. All right, let me turn to Twitter here while I wait for you guys to call me up, 646-832-3909. Scott, hypothetical, I can't read it from here. How do you think midweek CCL matches will affect playoff seeding, supporter shield, and player energy levels? Well, that depends on who these head coaches put out there. There were some hints coming out last couple of days, as you've got Seattle and Vancouver tonight in the CONCACAF Champions League, as to who they'll put out. That game's on FS2 at 10 o'clock tonight, by the way. I don't expect first-choice lineups, and that's a matter of, again, keeping players somewhat fresh for the last couple of matches of the MLS season, which is going to ultimately determine where you are in the standings, what your seeding is, which is incredibly important for a team like Seattle. If Seattle can avoid a first round match, I'm sure they would love to. Right now they're in fourth place, but they're only 2 points back of FC Dallas and the LA Galaxy. The same goes, look, Vancouver wants to maintain their top spot. They may want to go for that supporter shield. Go after a trophy that they've never won before. They've only been in MLS for a couple of seasons now. So there's a lot to play for in the MLS season, and it is going to have some sort of impact. I don't know why I could say declaratively, you know, in a declarative way that Vancouver's going to lose out on the supporter shield because they're in the Champions League. I don't think it works that way. But it's going to have some sort of impact, and it's on Siggy Schmidt, Carl Robinson, obviously Bruce Arena to sort of juggle these things. I mean, LA is right now on the road in the Champions League as they look to solidify and lock up their place. And if they can lock up their place, I'm sure Bruce will feel better about their situation, and they won't have to he won't have to worry about whether he's going to play any starters in these games. Gio in Texas, you're on the air.
Hey, Jason. First off, I wanted to thank you for starting most of your shows. I don't know if you did it this morning with a happy whatever day it is. That's such a positive message, man. My day started off well.
I'll say this again. While every job has its negatives, and not everything goes right, and it's all about context. You can have the greatest job in the world, but if everything doesn't go exactly right, you're going to be cranky that day. I have a great job. I can't ever complain about my job. And I know that this might not last forever. So every day is pretty much a happy day for me, Gio.
There you go. That's a great attitude. Secondly, I wanted to talk about DC United last night, managing a come-from-behind draw, 3-3. With just a really, really interesting lineup, especially on the bench.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, I know that last night's game wasn't super critical for DC.
Well, it's just about seeding, right? Just about seeding.
Go ahead.
It's about seeding
right.
in the Champions League. Not they've already locked up their spot in the knockout rounds.
Right. Yeah, it was one of those things where I know that it didn't really matter, so I understand not bringing a full squad in that sense. But isn't it a bad look when you go down 3-0 to Montego Bay?
Well, it's a bad look if you lose 3-0. They came back. I mean, the draw is not what you wanted, and DC United should be able to beat Montego Bay anywhere, even in Jamaica. But, give those kids that were on the field a little bit of credit, for coming back. I mean, this is how little that game mattered. Ben Olsen wasn't there, right? Chad Ashton had the con.
Right. It was one of those things that maybe I'm almost certainly being overly precious about it. But it does feel to me a little bit disrespectful to Montego Bay when you don't even bring a B team. You don't even bring a full team, you could say.
Yeah, I guess.
To play that game.
I guess. But yeah, they only had three guys on the bench. They started Arrieta and Curia up top, Doyle, Farfan, Jeffrey, Pontius in the midfield, Aguilar, Opare, Robinson, and Michu at the back, and then Andrew Dykstra in goal. So, I mean, look. I don't know. I mean, while I can understand what you're saying, Gio, at the same time, until MLS gives these teams the tools, and I say that meaning, clearly it's about the salary cap and what they spend in depth and everything else, but it's also, I guess even in that situation, you're going to be playing a B team. It might just be a better B team, and maybe DC United isn't one of those teams that would spend that money even if they had the opportunity to. But I think I just feel as though until MLS gives them the tools to deal with the multiple fronts, and because DC United is a team that is in the midst of a bit of a spiral, I guess that I find it very difficult to blame Ben Olsen with that knockout round spot already locked in. I find it difficult to blame him for sending a bunch of kids and second choice players and not sending a full squad when the rest for the playoff stretch matters more than beating Montego Bay United.
And that's the difficult thing for me, I think, is that I completely agree with that sentiment, and yet it still upsets me to see that, because as you said, until you give MLS teams the resources to really build depth in the squad, you're going to have performances like these, and then you have CCL matches that who cares about, I watched that game because it was about the only soccer on last night. But, I'm a hardcore fan. Your casual viewer cares less now about CCL if that's the only game that he watched. They didn't even bring the full squad.
This is why I'm of the opinion, and it took a little while for me to come around to this realization. But this is why I don't think the CONCACAF Champions League has a big time future. Now, it may be a fine middling competition. We'll get those occasional showdowns against between MLS teams and and Mexican teams, probably regular late tournament showdowns in the final and whatnot, or semifinals. But I don't ever think that the CCL is going to suddenly become a big deal. At least not in anything resembling a short time frame. I don't think that we can go year over year growing this tournament because it remains a tournament that has too many teams like Montego Bay United, who, no offense to them, but it's just the fact of the matter that no one knows them and nobody cares about them. Outside of Jamaica, which is what? How many? A couple million people on Jamaica. I mean, this is a tournament that turns too much on the two big leagues, and because those two big leagues are the only leagues with name recognition within the two big countries, the same countries that drive television interest, you can't get over that hump. You just can't. Some of this Champions League, let me just pull up where we are in the CONCACAF Champions League to kind of illustrate this. I mean, it's not the tournament's fault. It's not CONCACAF's fault, really. There's nothing you can do about the fact that, you know, most of the confederation is made up of small countries or countries with one notable team in it, and even they're only notable within their very small sphere of influence. It's not as though I'm saying, oh, CONCACAF is really screwing this up, and if they only did this, it could get better. I just don't know that there's a glass ceiling here that they're never going to get through. I mean, we know Saprissa because we're hardcore fans. The casual MLS fan, they have no clue who Saprissa is. They couldn't tell you what country Saprissa comes from, but they can tell you exactly where AC Milan comes from and where PSG comes from and where Barcelona and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich and Chelsea and Manchester. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are so many big clubs in Europe that even the early rounds of the UEFA Champions League has that interest and that thing that pushes the tournament all the way through. CONCACAF has to get to the knockout rounds, and even then, we're talking about 3-4 clubs, right? And then MLS teams sometimes fall out, and the Mexican teams don't really care as much, and, you know, and then we also have this fact that the Mexican teams dominate, and now it's suddenly, it doesn't feel like a legitimate competition. And, Trevor's talking about the presentation, but I don't think that's another thing you can't do anything about. It's the chicken and the egg, right? The CONCACAF Champions League drives zero revenue. I mean, maybe not literally zero, but effectively zero revenue for a network like Fox Sports. The reason Fox is in the business of broadcasting the Champions League is because it fills up some time on their network where they have a lot of they need a lot of inventory, and because it's relatively cheap to present. That's what makes it worth their while. If you said, in order for the CONCACAF Champions League, you have to go to the venue. You have to put on a big show. The place needs to be filled up. The stadium. Look, the stadiums are crap, right? The stadiums are crap. And this is the same thing. I mean, people ask me all the time, Gio, how can you watch MLS after you watch the Premier League? Now, I am the type of person who can derive entertainment out of each one and sees the differences in each one as actual strengths, even though I recognize the Premier League is much better soccer than MLS. But this is, for a lot of people, going from watching, a game at the Bernabeu between Real Madrid and Juventus. I mean, obviously that's a final, but, you know, or Barcelona and Juventus is whatever. You know what I'm saying? Even in the early stages, Real Madrid is taking on a team that has name recognition at the Bernabeu in front of 90,000 people. In this tournament, it just does. We don't have that. We've got Montego Bay United playing in for what we would kind of identify as a glorified high school football stadium, in front of a small crowd, with players we've never heard of, and I just think that by comparison that this tournament will always suffer. This is why, while I'm hesitant to say it would ever actually work logistically, this is why the America's Champions League sort of has some resonance with me. at least Sao Paulo and Corinthians and River Plate and Boca Juniors and Millonarios, at least they have some, and you know, at least they have some cachet to them. At least if you know that if you have to go play Boca in a match in a tournament that means something and will bring everybody, whoever wins it, a lot of money in terms of prize money, at least you know La Bombonera is going to be filled up and the people are going to be going crazy. And you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't, and even that's not going to, even that's not going to be UEFA Champions League level, but it's a lot closer to what we get now from the CONCACAF Champions League.
Well, that was actually where I was going to take the conversation too, was with the proposed America's Champions League. I think that could definitely work out. Like you said, you bring in some of those South American clubs, and then you can still keep the CONCACAF Gold, not the Gold Cup, the CONCACAF Champions League and the Liga, the Libertadores, is that it?
Yeah.
As your sort of Europa League contest, you know, one tier below America's Champions League, if you want to put it that way.
I don't know. I don't know that there's any easy fix. You know, that's the part of the problem. Our friend Antti in Finland is saying, you know, do MLS teams have name recognition in Jamaica? I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. And Trevor, you know, Trevor's point is, okay, imagine Boca Juniors coming up to play Red Bull New York. That's probably going to sell out, and it's better than a meaningless friendly in the middle of the season. I think sometimes as soccer fans, we want what we can't have. And while it's difficult to come to the realization as American soccer continues to grow and as soccer in this part of the world continues to improve and get better, and we can see more of it, I think that, again, you're always going to suffer by comparison, and because you're always going to suffer by comparison, it's going to prevent people from buying in a major way. I've always said that part of the reason that ProRail works in Europe, part of the reason that those leagues are what they are in comparison to MLS is because they existed in a bubble for 60 or 70 years before anybody had to anybody had the opportunity to watch another league. You know, so you know, Serie A had a chance to grow up and become what it is and create its own lore and grab all of the fans that they have without having to be compared to the Premier League or vice versa. MLS doesn't have that. Soccer in this part of the world doesn't have that. We exist now in a time when everything is going to be compared to something else. Stephen Clark here on Twitter. Champions League, the CONCACAF Champions League needs cash to lure teams. Teams need fans to spend to take it seriously. Fans want both to go all out before spending. It's a vicious cycle because no one wants to give in first. There's no immediate payout or guarantee, so why invest? It's the same argument that holds Euro fans back from following MLS. They want top quality before paying attention. This is what I mean by chicken and egg. Well, I think MLS is a fun league and people should watch it. I'm not going to presume to tell some soccer fan you have to watch MLS. It doesn't work that way. We get to choose what we want to participate in. So, but until fans do, and MLS, meaning the Champions League as well, until fans do in large numbers, until they're watching in large numbers and it drives the revenue and it gets the television networks to buy fully in, the CONCACAF Champions League is never going to be a thing. It's just not going to be interesting. It's not going to be big. It's not going to have any cachet to it. It's not going to have any prestige, but those people won't buy in until it does have prestige. You know what I'm saying? So now what do we do? It's a catch-22. What do we do?
Well, for me, personally, I just... you got to try being me sometime, Jason, because it's pretty great. I have I have on my rosy glasses that, you know, I see the world through a rose-colored lens, if that's the expression. And in my mind, the biggest thing that MLS has going for it, strangely enough, is that it's American. And people around the world love to take up American products. They like American TV. They like American culture. You know, all of that stuff. it's really strangely popular in all the rest of the world when, you know, people will always tell you that, oh, you travel abroad, people hate Americans and all of that stuff. But really, you know, maybe they hate the stereotypical obnoxious American, but most people around the world love American culture and want to be a part of it. And you already see so many quote-unquote aging European stars wanting to come to MLS because they want to live here, they want to raise their children here. There's, for me, I think the biggest trump card that MLS has going for it is that it's American, and that we have all of this money, all of this cachet throughout the world. We don't have the money yet, but, you know, once we get there, I think that it's an inevitability.
Sure, but
kind of a snowball effect.
But it's over a timeline that a lot of people don't want to wait for. Gio, that's the issue. I appreciate the call, man. I'm going to move on. It's good discussion. I think the biggest factor in all of these things, whether it's when MLS becomes truly mainstream, when MLS becomes a competitor to Liga MX, when MLS, well, okay, some of this is about owners making decisions on how much to spend, et cetera, et cetera. But there's just the fact that time is the biggest element that we refuse to accept its pay. I mean, we just refuse to accept the notion that time matters as much as it does. We want to skip ahead. We want to jump. We want to go from A to C and skip over B entirely, and we can't do that. It's just not going to work that way. Chico in New York, what's up, man?
Hey, Jason. Just because Jean Clapart, I wanted to wish everybody an easy fast before we got into what I wanted to talk about.
Very good. I'll admit that I hesitate on that because I'm never clear what to say. Easy fast. That's what I need to say. Yes, easy fast to all our Jewish friends out there. Go ahead.
Sure, that's the English version. I wanted to call and talk about 24 under 24. I know that maybe you don't want to talk about it since you've been on previous lists, but
yeah,
I came out yesterday.
I got dropped.
I was kind of perplexed by some of the choices, but I'll let you give your thoughts first.
I looked briefly at the list the other day. I'll pull it up right now. Let me just address the fact that, yes, I was previously on the 24 under 24 panel. In fact, I think it was like a 3 or 4 year run, and I was summarily dumped, and I don't know why. And I'd like an explanation. I mean, if you're going to dump somebody, you should at least let them know why. You don't just stop calling. That's rude. No, I'm just kidding. It's not a big deal. I'm really not that worried about it. The people on the panel, Jeff Carlisle, Dunny, Alexi, Kurt Larson, Patrick Leduc from up in Canada, Seth Vertelny, good friend of mine, Kyle McCarthy, great guy, knows the league inside and out. A guy from Optus Sports who I don't know, Katie Whittem from Fox Sports, Franco Panizo, who I like a lot, good guy, Alexander Abnos from SI.com, Andy Edwards, a great guy from Kansas City, Will Parchman, who knows pretty much more about soccer than anybody I know. I'm fine with the panel as it exists, and really it's just less pressure on me. I can just, now I get to rip apart this list, Chico. I got no problem with
Fabian. It's not exactly the speaker list from BlazerCon that's judging 24 under 24.
Ow, come on. I don't have a problem with Fabian Castillo. I think he's the most complete player under the age of 24 in MLS, at least in terms of the attacking end. And of course, this list trends towards the attacking end of the field. It goes Castillo, Mane, Leggett, who's a new addition to the league, who didn't make it last year because he wasn't here. Will Trapp, I like a lot. Matt Miazga, Harry Ship, Poku. Maybe we're overrating Poku just a little bit with this list because, you know, a lot of hype surrounded him. He's a good player. Don't get me wrong. He's got a lot of potential. But is he really the seventh best player under the age of 24? Or the seventh, whatever it is, seventh ranked player? I mean, some of this is about potential. Some of it's about contribution. Different people judge players different ways. Perry Kitchen, Joao Plata, who dropped a little bit. Kyle Larin on this list for the first time at number 10. Kubo Torres, Matias Laba. Juan Agudelo, who's still under 24 years old, pretty stunningly. Kellen Acosta, Kamar Lawrence, Andrew Farrell, Diego Fernandez, Octavio Rivero, Lucas Milano added. I don't know enough about Lucas Milano. I don't know if I would have had him this high. Kellen Rowe, Matt Polster, Alvis Powell, Tommy Thompson, and Eric Palmer Brown. Where are your issues, Chico?
I agree entirely with you on Poku. I thought, you know, he's 23 years old, so this is his last year of eligibility to be considered under 24. He hasn't really made that many appearances when you consider, you know, where the team is in the table, where his team is. the fact that he can't get on the field for a team that's doing that poorly in MLS just raises questions as to why he's considered so high on this list. When you got a guy like Diego Fagundes, who's ranked far lower on the list, the Revs are near the top of the table in the league. This is sort of a similar thing you could say for Kamar Lawrence, who's at 15.
Yeah, you know,
these guys are making key contributions for teams that are close to the top of the supporter shield table.
Yeah.
And Poku is far above them. I didn't understand that at all. I agree with you. I think it's mostly just hype. You know, this is his first year in the league. Clearly, it's a different team when he comes onto the field for NYCFC. They mm-hmm. are a much better team when he plays. But, you know, players that should be at that level on this list, you know, he's among Miazga, who we consider to be, you know, the next U.S. center back. He's amongst Perry Kitchen, who's been a starter for D.C. United for a pretty decent amount of time, and that's another team that's close to the top of the table. I just don't see it.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. Again, having voted on these things, the previous methodology, and I don't know if they lay it out here, maybe they do. Oh, they do. So they've got technical ability, soccer IQ, physical attributes, personality, and potential. You give a 1-9 rating for these guys. At least that's the way it worked when I did it. You get kind of wrapped up in this stuff, and there's definitely a recency effect, Chico, where when you vote definitely matters to how guys end up on the list. Because they released it now, but this list probably was, I mean, the voting probably happened a month and a half ago, you know? So at that point in time, that was when Poku was really making NYCFC go in a way they hadn't before. Now, you know, he's been in and out of the lineup. They've obviously had to work Lampard in. But that was sort of the height of Poku hype, I think. So that definitely plays a role in this. I think people get wrapped. And even smart soccer people can be sucked up into what they're doing in that moment. I think it's almost impossible. It's human nature. I do agree on Fagundes. I mean, he was number 5 the last 2 years. And to see him drop all the way to 17, I mean, ultimately it doesn't matter. I think he's a good player and he's only going to get better. He did sort of become second choice for a while. But that, you know, so much of that is that New England has so many options. I mean, Kellen Rowe is number 20. He was number 15 last year. Seems about right. Also a guy who's sort of in and out of New England's plans because they have so many options. And because Jay Heaps is trying to tweak his team. Beyond that, I mean, I it's hard for me to get upset about it. I'm not saying you are, Chico, but it's hard for me to get too worried about this stuff. Sebastian Legette at 3 is pretty interesting, considering how quickly that happened. You know, he's been great for LA, but he's also playing with a very good team that sort of covers, you know, helps him look better than maybe he is individually. And that's the other thing. How do you possibly take these players out of their team context and judge them as individual players? And imagine, well, if you took Sebastian Legette and dropped him into Colorado, is he nearly as good? That's a good question.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to judge how these players will do out of context, but you do see Harry Ship, Poku, in these high positions. So there's a decent amount that the people that judge the panel think that they can gauge from those performances. And I'm not saying that, you know, Harry Ship, Kwan Poku aren't very good players in this league, despite the fact that they're on not so good teams.
Yeah, here's another example of sort of the recency effect and how things that are happening in that moment can impact our appreciation. Now, it should when it comes to on-field performance. I mean, that should be a factor. But Eric Torres was number 2 last year. Now, obviously, he was scoring goals for a bad Chivas team, and that played a large role in how we viewed him. He was sort of carrying them when they were bad anyway. He was the only good thing they had going. Now he's with the Dynamo. He's only been there for, what, a month, month and a half? He hasn't made a much of an impact. The team has struggled, and he goes from number 2 to number 11. Is he really behind Kyle Larin in terms of talent? Is he really behind Poku and guys like that in terms of talent? I'm not so sure. I think it's the fact that he didn't play for, you know, he was in Guadalajara, and he didn't play for the Dynamo, and he was sort of off our radar a bit, and then he comes back and, again, getting his feet wet in Houston and trying to figure out how to play with them and score goals doesn't mean he's not the same player or a player on an upward trajectory, and it doesn't mean he's not still the number 2 best under 24-year player in the league. It just means that Houston's not Chivas, and he's not feeling it. You know, I mean, goal scoring is a streaky thing. I don't know. Lots of factors involved, Chico.
Certainly. And, you know, you could make sort of similar arguments as to why Juan Agudelo is so high on this list, why Lucas Milano is on this list at all, having only, I think he's only scored one goal for Portland so far in his MLS tenure. Not to say he's not going to be, you know, a great player for them in years to come. He's getting his feet wet, as you said.
Yeah, played eight matches, scored one goal, has one assist, cost some money, came in with a little bit of hype. You know, that goes into your brain. And you know, I'm not calling anybody out here. But how many of these people, you know, a couple of them probably have, but how many of these people have spent a lot of time watching Lucas Milano play outside of those eight games with Portland? Probably not that many.
I can't answer that.
I know. I'm positing a, and again, this is not necessarily their fault. That's the other thing. You have to work with the information available. And again, I have no problem with the panel. And I know all of these guys took it, all these people, men and women, took it seriously and did their best, but remember that they're fallible and that they're human and that they're impacted by things like what happened yesterday and hype and reputation that may or may not be deserved based on the level of ability. And again, it's all relative to the other players in the league. Lucas Milano's a good player. Is he the 19th best player under 24 in the league? I mean, that's one appreciation. Who knows?
It's speculation at this point, considering, you know, as you said, eight
games. It's just fun. It's just fun is what it is. I mean, it is. It's fun. And you know what? A good list, what a good list does is get people talking, and that's what we're doing, Chico. I appreciate the call, man.
Thank you.
There goes Chico. Good stuff. 24 under 24. MLS's annual exercise in ranking the younger players in the league. All right, that's going to wrap up this edition of Soccer Morning on a Wednesday. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Ross Dunbar for his patience as we dealt with that Skype issue. It was some good talk on the Bundesliga. Regardless, Robert Lewandowski, he is a god today. Make sure you go to iTunes and leave Soccer Morning a rating. And if you have some time, leave us a review as well. It helps out the show. You know, we're here every day doing this the best we can. I think we're doing... I think that we're providing some good stuff for you. If you enjoy it even a little bit, if it's part of your routine or you just dip in and out when you can, it would be nice if you just show some appreciation by going and giving us a review. That's all we ask right now. You go to backheel.com, find a lot of cool stuff over there, including all of the Backheel shows. Go to worldsoccertalk.com. We've got some good stuff happening over there, and you can obviously watch the show live if you're a podcast listener. If you ever get a chance to watch us live, it's at worldsoccertalk.com/live. What else? Trevor, am I missing anything? I feel like there's a loose end to tie up here. No? Am I done? I think we're done for today. I think that's a good show in the books. Thanks to everybody that called in. And we will hit you up tomorrow, Thursday. We'll talk about the CONCACAF Champions League. There's some more League Cup happening. Probably spend another hour talking about Robert Lewandowski because it was just that amazing. Soccer Morning. See you guys later. Bye. Disappear. What I put my heart on every curve.